the ideas and knowing what I want to say is there. But how to organize it, and where do you start? Is that what an editor does? And tells you, you know?
Well, that's a good question. Like, where do you start? I'll just tell you how I do it. I love to outline. It's important for me to have an outline. And what I do is I start with a blank page. And if I don't already have my title, I like having my title before I start. Because my titles, they usually keep me like, wow, this is good. This is what I want to write about. I try to have my title really, you know, be not my passion, but what is it that I want to say, you know? And I'll start with a blank page, and I'll say, okay, well, what chapters do I think are important? So I'll do outlining. But other times, I know writers who just start writing, and that they feel okay about just letting it flow and let it come out, whatever it is that comes out, and then they organize it down the road. I think part of this has to do with typology, you know, the Jungian typology I was telling you about, that it's how you organize information, how you organize the world, how you organize your expressions. I'm a feeling type person, so I just write from my heart. I just write what I feel. I'm not analyzing it so much. But then I have to go back and analyze it. I would imagine a thinking type person would probably do a lot more organizing and planning and preparation before I would do it, more than me, okay? So I think that you just have to find, like, what would be the best way to do that. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like you need to have it all organized before you start writing? Right.
I know I have it in me. Okay? So it's like if I had that on paper and there was like a title there, then I could pour it out.
Well, then I would lay, if I were you, I would probably, it sounds like you need structure. And I would probably start breaking it down into small pieces. So, for example, say you want to, is it fiction or nonfiction?
Nonfiction.
So, say you want to write about eating disorders or something like that, then I would start breaking it down. Okay, well, what is it? What do I think are the important areas that I need to talk about? And just be open to the idea that it's like a pregnancy. You have no idea how it's going to turn out. All you know is that it's a pardon? Yes.
Answer her own questions, and that would help her begin to get it out.
Great idea. Great idea. Writers' groups. That's a, you know. That was just my way of getting your, getting your own psychological mind together. Therapists, you know, we're oftentimes what draws us to the field is our own wounds, and I think it's really important that to be a writer, you have to be as integrated and as whole as possible because, like I said, that it is, for me, again, I think that there was a direct correlation between how my writing has evolved over the years and my own analysis over the years. And as I grew and became more secure in myself and more integrated in myself, that my writing reflected that. And I think it's not coincidental that I would strike out to write a novel more recently, because I don't think that's something that I ever would have felt secure about doing 20 years ago. Okay? Yeah.
I work with young girls at the Florence Crittenden homes turning their journals into theater pieces.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things I learned with the girls and for myself is that speaking, imparting information is exactly that, but we all have different ways and different strengths. Some people are raconteurs.
Right.
And they speak. And sometimes you need to adopt the raconteur when you're writing.
Yes.
You have to be expansive as though the audience is out there.
Right.
And that you have to find your own way of communicating, whether that is taping yourself when you're being expansive after you've had a question, being late at night, sitting there with your tape recorder and just whispering your secrets into it or whatever. Whatever way to get it out so that you can hear what your way of communicating is the way you write. You know, it's real important to find out the way you write.
Right.
So many different kinds of ways.
Good. Very good. Yeah, well, that sounds like, you know, what you're doing with these young girls is helping to instill that ability to communicate in that way. Because it's one thing to stand up and talk about it. It's another thing to write it. Yeah. So did we go through everything, I think, here? Yeah. Write in small pieces. You know, I think it's okay to say, I'm going to write for 1 hour, and whatever comes out, comes out. Or I'm going to write for 15 minutes. Or I'm going to write just one paragraph. Or in the cartoon, I'm going to write 500 words. I think it's okay to say, I'm just going to do this amount, and that you'll feel good when you've done it. So don't say, I'm going to finish this chapter tonight. You may not be able to do that. Organize and outline, capture ideas, observe your world. I think that one of the most important things about writing is that you're the detail that it takes to communicate ideas is, to me, is really great. And so you've really got to be a good observer. Kind of like when we're sitting in the room with our clients, is that we have learned to really observe, not just listen to what they say, but how they say it, and how they sit, and how they dressed, and the tone of voice, and the look on their face, and their body posture. That over time you've become a good observer of human beings. So as a writer, you want to do the same thing, so that when, say, for example, you want to write about an event that happened in your neighborhood, you go out, you really have to ask yourself, what am I seeing? What is going on? What am I noticing? What do I smell? What do I hear? What are the colors? What are the smells? You know, these are things that will help you embellish and create detail in your writing, which is what people look for when they read. If you're general, if you're kind of obscure, you're going to lose your writer's focus. And so it takes a tremendous amount of detail. So, for example, when I in my novel, what I'm having to do is describe people to my reader. So when a new character walks in, I have to describe who they are. And that wasn't an easy thing for me to do, for me to learn to be that specific. And so I would start with their clothes, and then I would start with their tone of voice and their accent and how they held themselves and what was the feeling that they convey. And so it was a real exercise for me to bring my characters alive. I think that's probably the hardest type of writing is fiction for most people, because it does involve bringing a character to life. And, you know, when I first started my novel, somebody told me, don't be too invested in the ending, because if you develop a good character, they will end the story for you. And it was absolutely true. I finished the novel. I've been through the first run-through already, so I'm now going back and rewriting it. But it was really true. The story ended in the way that I hadn't even predicted. And that's because my characters showed me the way to the ending. And someone told me that, and I thought, oh, okay, yeah, sure. You know, but it's really true that the more developed your character is, the more they'll start telling the story, and they'll take you into the ending, okay? And then, of course, getting help is always good. There was one point in my life when I did belong to a writer's group, and it was great because we read to each other our various projects that we were working on. There are a lot of bookstores that now are independent bookstores in particular that are trying to make it during this economy, but particularly the competition for the big box stores. They're offering things like writer's groups and classes to really encourage reading and writing. And so that might be another resource for you. If you're in Marin County, I'm sure many of you know about Book Passage, which offers these kinds of groups, as well as I'm sure there's bookstores in San Francisco that do the same. Okay. So what I want to do is we have about 45 minutes left. Oh, no, we have an hour left, 4:15, right? So what I want to do is just take 10 minutes, and I want you to turn to one of the people next to you. And you don't have to be I changed this because it's no way we can do like this 4 to 6 in a group. Just turn to the person next to you and just talk briefly about what your personal obstacles are to writing. What gets in your way of sitting down and doing it? And then also talk about what has helped you in the past, either to write or maybe you haven't had the experience yet of getting past those obstacles, but what has helped you in the past overcome difficult tasks that you've had to do? And just let's take about 10 minutes to do the exercise, and then we'll just come back and process it. Yes?
Do you have a comment about one note
taker? No, that was for a group. That was for a group. Okay. Well, if you guys just want to talk the rest of the time, that's fine with me too. Because that would like take a total edge off my anxiety. Okay, so let's just, anybody care to share what's been their obstacle but what's helped them either overcome that obstacle or, yes?
Well, it was just serendipity that Johanna, tell me the origin of her name, she said what I was thinking. I was thinking of sharing it, and she said the difficulty of what I identify as being an extrovert and being an interactive learner and also figuring out what I think by talking. So it's very difficult. I went to graduate school, going to class one day a week and staring at a computer the rest of the week by myself and getting depressed because I needed to be able to interact to do what I had to do. So the process of actually interacting human to human is very important for
yes.
for both of us to trigger that inspiration and to trigger. We get millions of ideas and inspiration and things that I've written in the past, but to actually get it flowing requires some sort of human interaction. So we were talking about how can we then make that happen? What can we do to make that happen? We have to write. I mean, if that calling is there, that I can't live without writing, then how can we make something like that happen? One of the things that's happening for me, oddly enough, and it came from I can't remember the mission or something, but I'm a 2-time breast cancer survivor recently, the second time, and out of that has come this calling, you know, to make a difference in that area, but in getting involved on Twitter, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. To advance my breast cancer business has converted me with some writers.
Great.
And interacting, and so now I'm writing not just about breast cancer, but about families and theology and counseling and Pomeranians and all kinds of stuff. What do you love? You know, what am I?
Yeah, so interacting with other writers has allowed you to put your ideas out there, and then how do you transition?
Spark off of them. Another yeah. thing,
yeah.
They'll
say, I see.
They'll say, read my blog, and then we'll interview. You know,
yeah.
It's a way that's
interesting.
Joanna's saying she really needs it to be more in the flesh.
Yeah. So, I think a writer's group for you. I really do. I think a writer's group with other people where you're bouncing ideas off of each other.
She wants me to move to San Diego, so I can.
Okay.
also talking to the leader, I was about this whole process of you suggested about when you said about writing from your heart. Some of us are think speaks and some of us are speak think.
Yes.
Yeah. From neurolinguistic.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
And the ideas flow out.
Yeah. Well, I'm a think speak. No, I'm a speak think. So I have to talk, and that's most of my books. Which are nonfiction on domestic violence and child abuse, I came out of workshops that I did.
Yes.
So I prepared slides. So I was even thinking today, I was thinking, oh, I could write an article about writing. And and I would use these slides as kind of a start for me to organize my thinking, because I had to organize it to talk to you all. So other people.
I realize what's motivating me is the need for a legacy.
Mm.
To leave something behind.
Oh, yeah.
Family, children, grandchildren.
Yes.
Kind of thing. So that was an aha moment. And it's like, okay, I better get
cracking. Yeah, yeah. She, what she is motivating her is wanting to have a legacy, is wanting to leave something for the next generation. And so that makes her, so you probably want to write something more about your life, right?
No?
Oh, okay. Just something that outlives you. Something that outlives you, basically. Yeah, yeah, great. Uh-huh. Right.
It was help, like, she had one guy, she said, I want to thank you so much because I didn't know what to do at the end of chapter one or chapter four, whatever it was, and you told me to put a sound right there. And I was like, that is very specific.
Yeah.
That's a very specific thing to tell a writer, but that's how open the writing process
that's
was,
great.
Was to others.
That's great, yeah.
After I finished something, there's been a committee, they're like, you need this here. I had the original idea, but to really make it good, I just remember, I had so much help.
That's true. You know, it's good to tell people that you're writing, and because they're going to ask you about what you're writing about, and it forces you to talk about it and get more clear about it, because especially if it's cocktail or you know, a party thing, you don't have a lot of time. So you got like a few minutes to pitch it. You want to be able to tell the story in you know what it's about. So it's good to tell people. I remember when I was doing, a long time ago, I got trained in hypnosis and I was doing smoking cessation. And that it's really important to tell people in your life that you're going to stop smoking, so it creates the expectation. So now people come to me and they say, well, you know, when are you going to get done with your novel? And when am I going to see it? And I could send you the novel because it's I've done the first draft now. But now I'm working on it. So to get that expectation in the people in your lives who you care about and who care about you will help motivate you. Yeah.
I realize that one of the things standing in my way is I have all these free-flowing ideas, and I've been able to write when somebody has said, come to me and said, we want you to write this article for this thing, and it needs to be this long, and okay, do it. And I think, oh, I can do that, you know, and I sit down, I have lots of, it comes, but my ideas, when I don't know how long it's going to be or where
yeah,
it's going to go,
yeah.
Or that's
it's harder
chaotic.
Because then you have to choose. Because instead of somebody saying, "I want you to write about, you know, cars," you're gonna, you know, you have to decide between all the things that you would like to write about and kind of narrow it down and start.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's harder. It's much harder. Yeah.
Okay, I know my office is at 3030 Bridgeway.
Oh, hi, neighbor. Yes.
And then set a timer for 10 minutes and write nonstop. She said, you do not put that pen down and you don't even let it stop.
Right.
Because as soon as you do, then your mind's in the game. And it has been that piece that I wrote about my daughter, I had no idea what was going to come out. It was profound. I don't even know the French.
That's great.
And
well, it's good to be enchanted, because that triggers that that creative spirit. I have a book called, I think it's called The Writer's Box, that you open up and it's got like 100 cards in it, and you take out one and it's something like that, you know, the last time I saw my mother, and you just write on what card you pull. So it's kind of a cool, I got it at Book Passage, so it's I think it's called The Writer's Box or something like that. Yeah.
That's my view, and I work much better if you give me a deadline and I have to get it done. But I, even if I impose a pseudo deadline, I can't fool myself.
Well, that's why. What was the name of that book? I'll Quit Tomorrow. You know. You're right, and that's why you have to have a specific time. That for me. When I am serious about writing and I do have a deadline, I have to make a specific time each week that I do my writing, and I sit there and do it no matter what. And I may, maybe some days I may just stare at the computer, and other times I may just come out with a couple words, and other times it will just flow. But I stick with my schedule. So that's what... bummer. Maybe I should go through my slides really quickly next time it comes back on, and then we can talk about other stuff. Okay. All righty. Well, I have some quotes, which virtually you don't have to see. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. We're still on the... Forgot. Oh, yes.
What I did was I did 8 hours of videotaping with my mother.
Oh.
Getting her story out and helping her get her story out. That worked well.
That's good. But a co-author is a good idea. We haven't mentioned that. I've had lots of co-authors. A couple of things, you know, things I do by myself, other times I take on a co-author. Now, for me, it could be defensive because I think I can't do it by myself. So it just, you got to think about why are you doing it? Are you doing it because, it's okay, we can just, are you doing it because you think it's going to help you move along, or are you doing it because you think you can't do it by yourself? And so that's just something to think about. Yeah. My first book was co-authored. The way we did it was I wrote most of it, and then he took it and he went through it and put his, his personality and his ideas to it. And then, but it was still mostly mine. And then over the years, as we updated it and revised it, it became more equal. So the very first time, we didn't actually split the royalties 50-50. But over time, as we have kind of put each of our own mark equally on it, because, you know, it was written in 1982, so it's been revised about four times. It sold a lot of copies. It's really nice. It sold over 300,000 copies. And so to know that, you know, kind of what you were talking about, kind of know that there's like 300,000 people who are, you know, own my book, it's a real affirmation, you know. So one more, and then I'll go into these, read some of these quotes that I have. Any other people care to share? Yeah.
The thing that I learned from the didactic thing was that I need structure and how to do that, maybe by suggestion was how, like, to make commitment with somebody else.
Yes.
Like I would if I was making an exercise commitment.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that Natalie Goldberg says that I love, and say the censored way is feel free to write the worst path you ever could.
Absolutely, absolutely. Which brings me to the next, which brings me to the first quote. Okay? So Anna Quinlan, this is something she says about writers. Yeah? Pardon? About having, making a commitment to write just like you would, like, working out, I would imagine. You know, I'm going to start this kind of program of working out. I'm going to start working out my writing in this kind of program. So making a commitment to somebody else. So again, it's being accountable to somebody else who would say, hey, you said you're going to write 3 paragraphs this week. Did you do that? Okay. So Anna Quinlan, she says, people have writer's block not because they can't write, but because they despair of writing eloquently. Right?
Can you repeat what Val said? Because she was talking to you as a part
of her. Okay.
Very funny.
About making a commitment to... Oh, right. Feel free to write the worst crap, because there is no worst crap. I'm gonna get to that. Nothing is wasted. Nothing is wasted. Stephen King. If we think of ourselves as laborers, as craftsmen, it's easier to sit down and write. We're just putting words on the page. After all, one beside another, as a bricklayer puts down the bricks. At the end of the day, we're just creating things, stories, poems, or plays, only we use vocabulary and grammar instead of bricks and mortar. It's kind of a cool thing. The next slide is just about taking your time. Writer's block can be a sign that your ideas need time to gestate. Idleness can be a key part of the creative process. So sitting and staring at the computer and kind of playing with your pen can be just as important. Give yourself time to gather new experiences and new ideas from life, reading, or other forms of art before you start a new project. Set and keep deadlines. Many writers understandably have trouble doing this on their own. You might find a writing partner and agree to hold each other to deadlines in an encouraging, non-critical way. Knowing that someone else is expecting results helps many writers produce material. Writing groups or classes are another good way to jumpstart a writing routine. And of course, somebody mentioned when they have a deadline, they write. And if you are fortunate enough to have a publisher who says, I'd like this book and I'd like it to be out in September of 2010, I need it by September 2009, then that's going to it's gonna motivate you, especially if you get an advance. Yeah?
Does one find a writer's group or create a writer's group?
Either one. I mean, the writer's group that I belong to, it just kind of created. You know, I was talking to a dear friend of mine who's passed away recently, and he and I were both interested in doing writing, and we said, well, let's invite so-and-so or somebody else. And so, you know, we kind of created a group of 4 men, and we met once a month to talk about what we're writing, and met for about a year or so and helped move us along on our projects.
Are all 4 of you published?
3 of the 4. Write about your anxieties regarding writing or creativity. Talk to a friend, preferably one who writes. A number of books, such as The Artist's Way, are designed to help creative people explore the root causes of their blocks. So there are some books out there. If you go to Amazon, you'll see a million of them. So here, some more quotes. Brenda Uhland, she's one of my favorite authors. She wrote a great book called If You Want to Write. And I love her book because I read it, and it was really what inspired me to take this on as an activity in my life. Uhland, U-E-L-A-N-D, If You Want to Write. She says, it is so conceited and timid to be ashamed of one's mistakes. Of course they are mistakes. Go on to the next. F. Scott Fitzgerald, the reason one writes isn't the fact he wants to say something. He writes because he has something to say. Mm-hmm. Annie Lamott, who's another one of my favorite writers, who actually inspired my daughter to write because her son Sam was going to the same school as Marissa. So she came in and talked about writing and really inspired my daughter to do some writing. We are a species that needs and wants to understand who we are. And, of course, we do this through our writing, right? sheep lice do not seem to share this longing, which is one reason why they write so little. Okay, Susan Sontag. Reading usually precedes writing, and the impulse to write is almost always fired by reading. Reading, the love of reading, is what makes you dream of becoming a writer. And that was true for me. Another one by Brenda Euland. I learned that you should feel when writing not like Lord Byron on a mountaintop, but like a child stringing beads in kindergarten, happy, absorbed, and quietly putting one bead on after another. It's kind of what you were talking about just doing versus thinking. And this is under the heading, Writing is Hell. George Orwell. All writers are vain, selfish, and lazy, and at the very bottom of their motives lies a mystery. Writing a book is a long, exhausting struggle, like a long bout of some painful illness. One would never undertake such a thing if one were not driven by some demon whom one can neither resist nor understand. I didn't make that the last one. Hunter Thompson had a little bit more light thing to say about writing. He says, writing is the flip side of sex. It's only good when it's over. And then here's a couple quotes from Ursula Le Guin writing about how it's work, that writing is work. It's good to have an end to journey towards, but it's the journey that matters in the end. Hardly anyone ever writes anything nice about introverts. Extroverts rule. Now, I know this because my wife is an introvert, and I've learned a lot about introversion through her. This is rather odd when you realize that about 19 writers out of 20 are introverts. We have all been taught to be ashamed of not being outgoing, but a writer's job is ingoing, which is true, which makes it hard for some people to sit down and write because it is a deeply reflective process. And like some people have talked about, and as well as me, that we thrive on interaction. That's from Ursula Guin on writing.
But you're going to have all these on your website?
Yeah. You can download. You can go to my website, danielsonkin.com, and I have the handouts, this whole talk on PDF file. You can download it. Jane Yolen, who I believe is a children's writer? Okay. No, because it was all done at the last minute. For these conferences, you have to have the handouts like months ahead of time, and they put it in some book that you get, right? Okay, maybe not.
Can you get the spelling, how you're spelling your last name?
My name? Sonkin, S-O-N-K-I-N.
Thank you.
So it's Daniel Sonkin, DanielSonkin.com. Very musical. So Jane Yolen, she says, exercise the writing muscle every day, even if it's only a letter, notes, a title list, a character sketch, a journal entry. Writers are like dancers, like athletes. Without that exercise, that muscles seize up. So really, it's good to write as often as possible. I've noticed that after I finished writing my novel, that my process notes clinical work have kind of an interesting, you know, take on them, you know. Joe stood up and said, Daniel, how dare you say that to me? Daniel looked dejected. He turned down, looked at his feet, and said, well, I'm just trying to do my best. Okay, so writing and rejection. This is a nice quote. This is where writing is where I really turned my life. She's actually talking about the room where she did her writing, where she wrote her first book. This is really where I turned my life around completely. My life changed so much in this flat. I feel I really became myself here. Everything was stripped away. I had made such a mess of things in her life. I just thought, I want to write, so I wrote the book. What was the worst that could happen? It could get turned down by every publisher in Britain. Big deal. You know who that was? Yep, J.K. Rowling. And then writing and money. Writing isn't generally a lucrative source of income. Only a few exceptional writers reach the income levels associated with the bestsellers. Rather, most of us write because we can make a modest living or even supplement our day jobs doing something about which we feel passionately. Even at the worst of times, when nothing goes right, when the prose is clumsy and the ideals feel stale, at least we're doing something that we genuinely love. There is no other reason to work this hard except that love. And just some final thoughts about writing. This, I like this. This is Raymond Chandler. He says, when in doubt, have a man come through the door with a gun in his hand. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like just put something in there dramatic and see what happens. So I was actually thinking, when I saw this, I was thinking, why not? Why not just like do that in my novel somewhere? Just have somebody walk in with a gun in their hand, see what happens, you know? Ellen Datlow says, never throw up on an editor. That's also words of advice. And I forgot who said this, but if you think that something small cannot make a difference, try going to sleep with a mosquito in the room.
Yeah.
And then Lillian Hellman says, they're fancy talkers about themselves, writers. If I had to give young writers advice, I would say, don't listen to writers talk about writing or themselves, including me. So I have some books that I just want to go through really quickly that I've already mentioned. But again, these will be on the website. A wonderful book on writing by Anne Lamott is Bird by Bird, which is a wonderful novel about just the process of creativity and how it was for her. Stephen King actually wrote a book on writing, called On Writing. The book that I mentioned by Brenda Uhland, If You Want to Write, a book about art, independence, and spirit. Great title. A very famous, successful book called The Writer's Way by Jack Rollins and Stephen Metzger. Another great book is Writing Down to the Bones, Freeing the Writer Within by Natalie Goldberg, which was talked about. The book that I mentioned, Writer's Dreaming, by Naomi Epple, which I really like because I'm, you know, being in Jungian analysis, we're very much into dreams. My agent actually gave me two books when I started writing my novel that I found really helpful. And one is The Art of Fiction by Ayn Rand, and the other was called Story Crafting by Paul Bowles. She actually represented Paul on a couple of his projects, and so. So those were, I found, very, very helpful. Another book by Anne Bernays called What If? Writing Exercises for Fiction Writers. A dear friend of mine, you need to have these two books. The Blue Book of Grammar by Jane Strauss, which you can go to her website and find it. It's because at some point you're going to need to know how to say things. And then Elements of Style by William Strunk. So how I thought we would handle just the last 15 minutes or so, and we've kind of already done a little bit, but hold on a sec. I thought it would be kind of interesting. This slide just says your ideas/questions. Ideas you want to put out for support, ideas for books that you're thinking about writing. Problems you might be experiencing on a current project and get some feedback about what you think might help from the group. And or maybe what would be the first steps to starting your project. So, open.
On the self-publishing aspect?
Yes.
I really like all the ideas you've given and people share about. We all have something to say. I believe that I do have something to say. I also believe that I wouldn't have
I'm going to self-publish. How do you avoid unintentional plagiarism?
Oh, plagiarism.
Because I'm writing what I think is coming from within me, and I get it down and put it out on the web, and somebody says, hey, I wrote that in 1967.
Well, I would Google it, but I think, you know, to look at avoiding, you know, what are the legal aspects of avoiding copyright infringement. But basically, if you're writing nonfiction, I assume, so you're writing a book about something, maybe something professional, you just want to use citations and you want to attribute work as much as possible. So.
My question is, if I'm not aware that I've taken it from somebody,
well, there are plagiarism websites. Check.
Oh, really?
Wow. That's good to know.
So you can search on your idea.
Wow. So there are plagiarisms. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Somebody stole a whole chapter out of my book. And the only reason why my wife was teaching at Yale and I was in the bookstore near there and I was going through, I said, oh, you know, this book was there on anger. And I looked through it and it said, boy, this stuff is really familiar. And then I realized, hey, he took my stuff, you know, and it didn't credit me. So it didn't bother me that he took me my stuff. What bothered me was that he didn't credit me. So I think that's what's, you know, what's most important, you know, that in terms of actually taking material out of somebody else's book, there are ways of citing it, and there's ways of putting it, kind of having it stand out so that it says this is, this whole piece, this whole paragraph is from somebody else.
Yeah,
so, yeah. But if it's off the top of your head, yeah. Yeah, but, you know, chances are, even if you ingest somebody else's work, and you all of a sudden put it out there, you know, you're changing it. You're putting your spin on it anyhow. So, yeah. Yeah.
I'm writing a book based on the science of happiness and all the research that's coming out, but particularly for women, very practical daily habits.
Uh-huh.
And so how I could use help is I am looking for submissions from women as to how they access that inner joy.
Wow, great.
Stories, one short page. So I'd just like to say, if you would like to share your story in your car,
that's great. Great idea. You know, my wife wants to do a book on Obama dreams. Because I've had a bunch of them. Everyone that we know has had at least one. So it would be kind of an interesting thing about kind of understanding the psyche. And so so you do, yes. When you get information from other people, stories from other people, if you do get published, your publisher is going to want to know if you've gotten authorizations for them to publish their material. So a colleague of mine went through this book. She was studying to become a Jungian analyst in Europe, and she wrote a book. Linda Leonard, some of you might have heard of her. She wrote the book *The Wounded Woman*, on the way to the wedding, on creativity and destructiveness and all that. She's written a lot of Jungian books. So she came back with the manuscript for The Wounded Woman. The publisher says, did you get releases? She had to go back to Europe and track down these women and get releases from their dreams. So something you should remember.
I just wanted to mention that I'm writing a dissertation, which is
right. You know what? A lot of dissertations have morphed into books. So,
yeah.
A lot.
And it's on the therapist's experience of very long-term therapy.
Great. Oh, wow. That's interesting.
But I also wanted to mention anyone who's doing writing, theoretical writing, or that I'm at an institute that's in the north and the south, in Berkeley and in Los Angeles, and it's the Sandville Institute, and we have a table in the other room. Mm-hmm. And if anyone's interested in writing and actually wanted to get their PhD, it's a really great school for that kind of, it's a school where you write to fulfill courses.
So more phenomenological rather than empirical research. What's the name of the program?
It's the Sandville Institute.
The Sandville Institute.
It's the California Institute for Clinical Social Work.
Oh, wow.
And they changed the name because it's not just for social work, it's also for
clinical. What's Sandville stand for?
Sandville, Gene Sandville.
Gene Sandville. Okay, I see. Okay, that's good. Okay. All right, great. Thank you. I have a literary agent, and what my experience has been, I'm not like a big writer, I'm not famous or anything like that, and so, but yes, some large people who are very famous, they do have a publicist who helps them promote the book because the publishing companies don't do that anymore. They the publishing companies used to edit your book, they used to promote your book. And now there's such skeleton kinds of staffing situations that basically they are, they don't do much more for you than what you can do self-publishing. You have to really promote the book yourself. They are not going to do it for you. And so the publishing field has gone through a huge change in the last 15, 20 years. So, but I don't have a publicist, and I don't feel a need for one at this point, because my books are much more on small scale, and now something may happen when my novel gets published, if it gets published, but at this point, no.
One summer I did a really good course on screenwriting.
Oh yeah.
And I guess this is pretty much like screenwriting is pretty much like writing fiction in a way, but also chapters within nonfiction books. What sort of emerged, one of the big things that emerged for me out of that course was good movies, really good movies, can be written in two ways, probably many other ways, but two ways that really emerged for me. Number one, the writer sits back then, the writer sort of sits back and sort of like outlines the whole thing, just gets the whole outline, just puts it out there, this is where it's going to be, and then gets the structure, and then writes into that structure.
Right.
And then the other way is just to sit down and write. I can remember the Shawshank Redemption, I was written that way. The person just sat down and said, okay, I'm just going to write and just see what comes. Just goes... And then it just all came out, and then you sit down and it just concluded. And then that was the movie. So I find myself... I really enjoy that latter way. I guess if you're writing a nonfiction book, you've got to get an outline rule.
Yeah.
The chapters themselves, if you want to just sit down and write it and just see what comes, it's really very exciting. Because you get surprised, you surprise yourself, and at the end of it, you say, wow, it's fantastic,
Right.
But if you want to do an outline structure at all, do that too. Whatever your personality, whoever you are, just do it. But I think just those two ways. Feel free to do whatever you want to do.
Right. Did you all hear that? So there's the organized kind of structured approach, and then there is to just write. And I think that different people probably feel more comfortable with one or the other. And, for example, when I started my novel, I thought I could organize and structure it, and then I realized I couldn't because my characters were creating the story for me. I it wasn't me telling them what to do. It was them telling me where it was going to go. And so I discovered that it took a very different kind of approach. It took me a while. It took me about halfway through the novel to figure this out. Because I kept feeling like I wanted to go a certain way because I knew how it was going to end. And they didn't seem like they wanted to go that way. And so so it took me a while. And once I figured that out, I said, okay, just let them go wherever they're going to go. Just let them do what they're going to do. And it was a complete surprise to me how it ended. And I felt very happy because it felt more organic, and it also worked out that a sequel to the story. Because so they were saying, one writer said that, I forgot who it was, who said that stories don't end, the writer just stops writing. And that the story goes on. Obviously, there is no end to the story because the characters go on in some way. And so that's what happened with my novel. It just so happened to turn out that way. Yeah.
I have a practical question. If you co-write something, how does that work financially? Is there
You work it out. She asked, how does, if you co-write, if you have a co-author, how do you work it out? Like I said, that usually we work out, you work out something with somebody. For us, it had to do with how much work we each put into it initially. And I think that, like I said, over time, as the book kept getting updated, those differences seemed to disappear over time. Sometimes when you write an edited book, I've written a number of edited books, sometimes you pay, there were edited books where we did pay our authors a percentage of the royalties, and then there were edited books where we said, no, we're putting a lot of work into this in terms of, there's a tremendous amount of work when you're dealing with 10 different writers. And so the second project, we decided, no, we're going to just keep the royalties ourselves. So... Yes, absolutely. Yeah, she was asking about publishers are interested to know how well you're going to market the book. So if you tell your publisher, I'm not really interested in going on Oprah Winfrey, which I did, they don't like that. And this year I decided, because Oprah Winfrey calls me every once in a while. They say, we're doing, because they do their domestic violence thing. And I say, oh, no, I refer them to other people. And so one of my friends, who's also a writer, she says, you're the only person I know that doesn't want to be on Oprah Winfrey. And so, but you know what? It was defensive. I think I was feeling uncomfortable with putting myself out there. And so something happened this year that I decided, you know what? I do want to promote my books, because I've had a bad history with this. My publishers have often said, well, did you promote your book at your presentation? And I say, no, I didn't say anything about my book. And they get really mad at you because because you're losing their money. Because don't forget, they get most of the money from the sales. And so if you say something like that to a publisher, you're not going to endear them, because they want to know that you're willing to go out there and sell the book and feel comfortable with that. Well, first you got to decide you've got something to say. That's the first thing is everybody's got something to say. I have not met a person, anybody who ever comes up to me and says, oh, I want to write a book, my first response is, that's great. I encourage you to do that. That's great. Because everybody in this room has something to say and can write about something. The question really is do you want to do it? Do you want to do the work? But I have no doubt that everybody in this room could write at least an article and probably a book. It's just no question.
So to extrapolate to the previous question about the publisher's platform, so we have something to say, therefore there must be a publishing platform.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're going to ask you that. This is not a workshop on putting together a book proposal, but that's what you're going to have to do. There are books on how to put together a book proposal. But if you're a first-time author, 99 9/10% of the chance, they're not going to sell it to you on your idea. They're going to want to see your writing. And, I've published 8 books, even in the nonfiction area, and they're still saying, yeah, we want to see it, we want to see the book, basically. And so, you're going to have to write that book first, and that will help you put together your proposal, because, it's good to know what's in a book proposal, because you have to think about, well, who's my audience? It's like that cartoon that I showed you about a short attention span, medium attention span, long attention span. Who's your audience? And you write it to them. If it's for people with short attention spans, it's got to look a certain way. And if it's people with long attention spans, it's going to look different. Yeah?
Actually, I finished my dissertation in 85.
Uh-huh.
It was a big project.
Yeah.
There's something out there on the shelf. And I just don't know, what would be the first step?
To publish it?
Yes.
Well, the first thing, if it was published in 1985, the first thing you'd have to do is update it, because it's been 24 years, so you'd have to kind of rethink about, what kind of research and what kind of books have been written since that time. But you could start with that. You could certainly start with, depending on, if your dissertation was on something that's really unique, then you can start with what you have, but you'd have to kind of bring it into the 21st century.
Okay.
publisher?
Yeah.
Well, again, there are workshops really specifically about finding a publisher. There's a couple ways of doing, you know, there are many different ways of doing it. But the two most common ways is to find a literary agent or to start writing to publishers yourself. You have to be ready for a lot of rejections because this is a very, very bad time for the publishing industry. But you might start with small publishing companies. There is a book out there that has a list of all the publishing companies in the world. It's called Writer's Market. And it lists all the publishing companies and the kind of books they like to publish. And sometimes it's good to find a publishing company in your own area and go in and talk to them and tell them what you got. But first you would need to update it. You would really need to update it because you know they're not going to want to look at something that's 24 years old unless it's so unique and there hasn't been anything else written like that. You might have something special then. Pardon?
Unique and timeless,
right. So, okay, it's 4:15, we have to end. Anyhow, so it's been, I don't end my therapy sessions that way. Okay, go. Anyhow, thank you so much. Maybe I'll do this again.